I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it appears that the Royals' first series win of the 2025 MLB season will have to wait just a little bit longer. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber here with you, Jacob Mustard alongside producing our program tonight. We're here until 9 p.m. bringing you the latest sports news from around the country. No guests lined up for tonight's show, so a lot of opportunity for you to get involved. 913-586-7965 is our number. Feel free to text that number with any question or comment that you may have or a topic that you want to hear discussed on the show tonight. You can also call in at that number. We may have some time to take some callers here throughout tonight's program. But let's get things started with the latest with the Kansas City Royals. A day game today in Milwaukee ends in extra innings in walk-off fashion. A 3-2 win for the Milwaukee Brewers over Kansas City. It was another difficult day at the plate for the boys in blue. Four hits as a team in 35 at-bats across those 11 innings. Jonathan India was 1-for-5. He struck out three times. Bobby Witt Jr. was 0-for-4 with a strikeout himself. Vinny Pasquantino 0-for-4 with two Ks. Salvi had an 0-for-4 day as well. Kevin Biggio went 1-for-3 with an RBI. The only other RBI came off the bat of Michael Massey, who was 2-for-4. He was the only guy really consistently showing up at the plate today for Kansas City as the Royals fall to 2-and-4 on the year. Cole Reagans, outstanding on the bump today. He gave up five hits, but only one earned run. He walked two, struck out 10 in the ball game, as ends up with a no decision. Bullpen did its job, especially the first four or five guys out of the pen. Hunter Harvey came in and threw a scoreless inning, struck out two batters. Angel Serpa came in. He gave up a walk and a hit before he was ultimately pulled. Lucas Ursig then came into the game and threw two-thirds of an excellent inning, striking out one. John Schreiber struck out two and walked one in his inning of work. Daniel Lynch threw another scoreless inning, as he has been very impressive coming out of the bullpen to begin this season. Carlos Estevez gave up a run, not earned, however, as it was extra innings. And Sam Long also gave up a run in the ninth, in the 11th, excuse me. So Long now moves to 0-2 on the year. Estevez got the blown save, despite the fact that he did not give up an earned run, technically speaking, because of that runner on second base to begin extras. Royals are now 2-4 on the year. And you look at the stats to begin this season, and if your prediction through the first week of the 2025 calendar year for the Royals was that Michael Garcia was going to be your team leader in batting average, good for you. I mean, if you had that on your bingo card, congratulations. Not many of us did. Through the first week of the year, Mike is hitting .353. Mark Canna is technically second on the team in batting average, hitting .333, but he's only got six at bats. Jonathan India right now is third on the team in batting average. He is hitting .320 in 25 at bats. But you look down the rest of the lineup, and the big names, the guys that we constantly look at and point to as the leaders of this Royals team at the dish, not carrying their weight right now. Bobby Witt Jr. is hitting a measly .240. So far this season, 6-of-25 at the plate, no home runs, 3 RBIs, and he has struck out a team-high 6 times on the year so far. Salvador Perez, he's hitting .208 this season, 5-of-24. He does have a single home run, 3 ribbies, and has 5 strikeouts. Vinny Pasquantino, who was really the Royals' only offense in that first series of the year against Cleveland, bad series this go around against Milwaukee. He's now hitting .167. He is 3-of-18 to open up the year. Kyle Isbell's hitting .133. Hunter Renfro's hitting .111. And MJ Melendez is hitting a poignant .77. He is hitting a .077 so far this season. His on-base percentage is barely at 200. It has been a slow start for the Royals outfield with that combination of Isbell, Renfro, and Melendez, who are hitting about 100, 110 collectively between the three of them through the first three games of the year. Pitching-wise for this Royals team, the starting pitching has been up and down. Reagans, he struggled a little bit in his first start of the year, but was very, very good today. Chris Bubich was awesome over the weekend, right? We all saw him go out, strike out 8 and 6 innings of work. He did not give up a single earned run. Michael Lorenzen gave up 3 in that 5 1/3 that he had with his first start of the year over the weekend. Waka had a pretty good outing, although he only went 4 innings. And then Lugo, who went 5 full and gave up 3 earned. Sam Long has been one of the bigger struggles out of the bullpen to start the year. In 4 innings, he's given up 4 earned runs, so hopefully that doesn't stick around. It's been a lot of the work at the plate that has been dooming this Royals team to begin the year. Opening things up through the first 6 games of the year, they are collectively hitting .233 as a team. Not going to get it done. But again, it's the first week of April. No reason to panic just yet. We'll see what happens with the Kansas City Royals. They'll be back in action on Friday. So they're off tomorrow, back at the K on Friday for a 3-game series against the Baltimore Orioles, which could be kind of fun. We shall wait and see, right? It's the Orioles are, we did this a couple weeks ago. The Orioles are my preseason pick to win the American League and go to the World Series, where they will ultimately lose to the Los Angeles Dodgers because they seem to be the Avengers, basically, of Major League Baseball. As they're 7-0 to begin this year, they're one of only 2 undefeated teams left in the big leagues, along with the San Diego Padres, who are also in their division. And the Padres' most impressive feat so far this year has been their pitching. Padres have given up 11 runs in 7 games. 11 runs total in 7 games. They've outscored their opponents plus 25, which is the highest mark in Major League Baseball so far this year. 913-586-7965 is our number. And 816 says, do we donate a torpedo bat? Hey, listen, I don't know what the science says, right? But the Yankees have been hitting the cover off the baseball with those things. Is that the reason why they're crushing baseballs? I don't know. Seems like a weird coincidence. So maybe we give it a shot, right? Let's get the Royals a couple torpedo bats, see what happens. Could be interesting. Another 816 says, good evening to Spidey and the Colonel. Here we go, Jacob. I'm ready for this amazing show. Happy to have you guys on. Well, we appreciate it, ZC. Thank you for saying that. 660, I'm not going to read the full message because there's an expletive included in there. It says, trade Renfro for a bleeping washing machine. Hey, man, listen, I understand the frustration. I think that it is warranted. But again, we're not even a full week in. Opening day was last Thursday. We're six days in. So let's give it a minute. Let's see what happens when we get into late April, early May. I know that the overwhelming reaction right now is to, okay, enough of Hunter Renfro, enough of MJ Melendez, we got to find something else. And I get that philosophy. I understand where you're coming from, and I don't entirely disagree. I agree with you that they're going to have to look elsewhere at the corner outfield at some point this season. I don't know if it's right now. It's really, really hard to determine if a guy has it or doesn't have it 6 games into the season. And it's hard to stomach, but from a coaching standpoint, from a managerial standpoint, from a front office standpoint, you got to give a guy a little bit more rope to determine what he's going to do. You've got to leave him in the water a little bit longer to see if he's going to sink or swim. And as we all know, this is a sink or swim season for MJ Melendez. I don't think that it's time to panic about those guys just yet. 6 games into the year, 156 games to go. I think, I don't think anybody should have expected this Royals team to be 5-1 through the first six games of the year. The Indians and Brewers, or excuse me, the Guardians and the Brewers. Wow, I can't believe I pulled that one out. The Guardians and the Brewers were playoff teams a year ago. Both of them made the postseason. Both of them won their divisions. So that's two pretty difficult teams to start the year with. And I know that the Brewers really struggled in their first series of the year getting swept, but I don't think that's a team that's going to stay down for long. Let's give it a beat before we start reacting super strong. All right. Yeah, I think we're obviously jumping the gun on this, but how long do we give Renfro? I would say until the end of May. And it's interesting to me because I don't know who, if they're both struggling, which one you pull the trigger on quicker. Do you pull Renfro and look somewhere else sooner, or do you pull Melendez and look somewhere else sooner? Hey, folks, just want to point out, Gavin Cross hit for the cycle today. Just throwing that out there. Or not, excuse me, not Gavin Cross. Drew Waters. Drew Waters hit for the cycle today. One of the Royals' top prospects, a guy who has played in the big leagues with the Royals a little bit. That could be a guy you look at. I know Gavin Cross is another guy you might look at. Elite speed from Gavin Cross. He's great in the field. He's got a good arm. He does his job at the plate. He was great in spring training. So maybe you look his direction a little bit sooner. We shall wait and see. Way too early to worry about baseball. We need to get through April and at least half or three quarters of May, and they are still struggling before we worry about it. That came from ZC in the text line. I would agree with that. 913 said Hunter had four strikeouts. This is why I don't want Jack to go down, L-Dub. Hey, I get where you're coming from. I understand. For Jack Caglione, if he was going to be a part of this Royals team, I think it should have been on opening day. Put him on the opening day roster. I wasn't quite sure he was ready for that. So at the plate, I think he's ready for that. But I don't want to. You don't want to throw a guy out there in a corner outfield spot who has very little experience at it. And I know a lot of people will say, for the most part, if you're speaking in generalities, right field is probably the easiest position on a baseball field to learn. Allow him to learn it. Let's not rush his development, okay? Because by rushing him, you may destroy his confidence in the process, and we don't want that to happen. We want him to be absolutely well-manicured and ready to go when he ends up in the big leagues with the Royals to create this young, outstanding core of players that includes Bobby and Vinny Pasquantino and Jack there in terms of position players. And then you look at your pitching, and you've got good young pitching with a guy like Cole Reagans. Chris Bubich, at least so far this season, in his one start, did a great job. I think that we need to just wait a minute before we start making these massive, massive reactions. Another person says, definitely get Renfro out before MJ. MJ is at least younger. I agree wholeheartedly with that. It's hard, though, because Renfro is making quite a bit more money than MJ is. So to send down a guy or to bench a guy who's making a lot of money, but if he's preventing your team from getting wins, obviously you have to make that decision. So I would agree. Based off of age, you might give MJ a little bit more of an opportunity because he is younger than Renfro, and Renfro certainly on the back half of his career. 913-586-7965 is our number. Someone said, I know we're only a week in, but I'm done with MJ, Renfro, and Isbell. Renfro and Melendez, I can picture. Okay, Isbell, I think, has earned the benefit of the doubt to some extent. Has he been outstanding at the plate? No, he's hitting 133. He is off to an incredibly slow start. He's still a great, great center fielder. Good enough arm, plus speed at center, great glove. That's what he's there for, right? I don't expect Kyle Isbell to be a guy who hits 250, 260 or better on a year-by-year basis. Expect him to hit better than 133, certainly. I mean, if he's still hitting below the Mendoza line in June, we got some things to be concerned about. I think the corner outfield, there are guys that you can realistically look to and say, we're going to make a change here, right? I mentioned Drew Waters and Gavin Cross already. If Jack Caglione gets off to a hot start in the minors and by late May, early June, he has seemingly picked up how to play left, how to play right, although I don't know if he's athletically gifted enough to play left, although I'm not sure MJ Melendez is athletically gifted enough to play left, but I think he's a slightly better athlete. Then you look towards the corner outfield a little bit sooner, although Waters does have experience at center field, a great deal of it during his time in minor league baseball. We've got a few more of these messages that I want to get to here when we come back, along with maybe some Kansas City Chiefs or some NFL draft discussion. I'm sure we'll do that throughout the show as we are quickly approaching the 2025 NFL draft in Green Bay, Wisconsin. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber here with you alongside producer Jacob Mustard here on 96.5 The Fan.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot of early conversation about the Kansas City Royals. Earlier today, they lost a 3-2 game in 11 innings to the Milwaukee Brewers, and they're off to a sluggish 2-for-4 start to begin the season, or excuse me, 2-and-4 start to the season. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. Our text line, 913-586-7965. And a lot of you are responding about this conversation with the Royals, what they need to change, what has been bad to start the year. And there's a lot to be said for it. I know we're only a week in. We already read that one. 913 saying the lineup is atrocious. Too much pressure on Vinny, Salvi, and Bobby Witt to hit 300 with 100 plus RBIs. Yeah, I mean, you can't expect those guys to replicate what they did a year ago. Right? If not for the Vinny Pasquantino injury, the Royals would have had a trio of guys with 100 plus RBIs, which is incredibly impressive, but it is an extremely rare occurrence across Major League Baseball. Unless you're the Dodgers and you have, you know, 9 MVPs hitting in the 1-9 spots because they have just an exorbitant amount of money. They're just Scrooge McDuck over there in LA. Yeah, it is. It is way too much pressure. And I think the addition of Jonathan India is going to be able to alleviate some of that. Very, very impressed with the start to the year that India has had. 8-of-25 at the plate. He's walked a couple of times. That guy is going to become a fan favorite in Kansas City, right? The series finale against the Guardians, Emmanuel Clase goes high, hits him with nearly triple digits to the dome, and the guy's in the lineup the next day, goes 3-for-5. That's an impressive player. That is a guy who is willing to do what it takes to win a baseball game. Gotta love that. And he's going to be a big, big fan favorite among Royals fans, I'm sure, for many, many years to come, hopefully. But outside of him, right, it's been up and down. Massey's off to a solid enough start again this year. He's hitting 270 to kick things off. But then things take a very drastic dip. Kevin Biggio's 3-for-12, and he's next on the team in terms of batting average. And then you've got Bobby Witt, who is currently sixth on this team in batting average, hitting 240. So you've got your top three players who are not off to incredible starts this season. Maybe it is because of all that pressure that they have under them and the pressure that they were dealing with a season ago. And so if those guys are struggling and you don't have other guys picking up the slack, although, Mikel and India and Massey are doing a good enough job, the other guys are struggling even worse. Not a good start. Not a good way to get things kicked off for this Royals team. And 816 in the text line said, I would bring up Waters and have Isbell, Waters, and Garcia or India every day. I don't mind that idea. Michael Massey, of course, can play some outfield also, right? So if India needs a day off, then Massey can play second, and you can have Isbell, Waters, and Garcia in the outfield, or, you know, but then again, then you don't have a third baseman. So I think with those four guys you mentioned, Waters, Isbell, Garcia, India, mix in some Michael Massey if you can. I know Tolbert, the new call-up, does play some outfield, but I think he's just a temporary fix for Darren Blanco once he comes back from injury. But for the time being, when he's in there, 913 says, Isbell is a gold glove level center fielder, but he should bat ninth. Completely agree. Unfortunately, he's not your ninth best hitter. So until they can solve the problems going on with your corner outfield, Isbell's probably closer to a 7 or 8 hitter in this lineup because he's hit the ball better than Renfro or Melendez to get this season started, which is, to be honest, kind of a scary thought. We have a 660 in the text line who says, we don't need to give Renfro or Melendez any more opportunities. Wow. We've seen Melendez for 3 years now, and he's not getting better. We saw Renfro all year last year, and he isn't getting better. Not replacing both of them is just poor roster management, and waiting for an arbitrary date in the future is damaging. It's a very long response there, and I'm going to kind of take it step by step here. Yes, Melendez has been with the Royals for 3 years, but he's 26 years old. I mean, technically, if you're looking historically, that's not even the prime of one's career. So the door is still open for him to improve. And he made all of those changes during the offseason to his swing to try to shorten things up, make it a more fluid follow through, fluid swing. So he may just be trying to get acclimated to live, you know, live pitching in a game atmosphere with that new stance, with that new swing. And it may take him a minute. I know that it's hard to justify giving a guy a minute when you're a team that's supposed to be competing for a spot in the postseason. So I understand where you're coming from, but I think a few more opportunities should go MJ Melendez's way. Maybe I'm on the minority side of that. So be it. Renfro, he said, we saw Renfro all year last year. Yes and no. Because if we recall, Hunter Renfro dealt with an injury last season. He missed a bunch of time. And then when he came back off of that injury, he actually played a little bit better. He was hitting, you know, 200, 210 prior to that injury. When he came back, he was hitting closer to a 240 or a 250 clip, which I think is enough to justify having a guy like that in the lineup this year. If Hunter Renfro is a 240, 250 hitter, and he's back to a state where he's hitting 20 home runs on a year-by-year basis and those sorts of things, which is traditionally what he's done throughout his career as long as he's been healthy for a season, I think the Royals can justify keeping him in the lineup. So, but at the same time, you talking about not replacing both of them is poor roster management and waiting for an arbitrary date in the future is damaging. Yes, I agree with waiting on a date, and I don't think that that's what Matt Quatrero and J.J. Piccolo and this Royals organization is doing, but I think they know better than to give a guy 6 games and just make a split-second decision about, okay, that's done, right? 6 out of 162 games is not enough time to judge anybody on anything. Right? I mean, you've played 3% of the season at this point. And so to pull a guy, I just can't agree with that one just yet. 816 says, and I know Renfro and MJ are the low-hanging fruit, but I got to tell you, I'm a little bit more worried at the present moment with the top of the lineup not hitting very well. Yeah, I mean, Bobby's not off to as hot a start as he was at last year. I don't think that that's anything to panic over. Bobby Witt Jr. is a uber talented player. He's a top three baseball player on the planet, in my opinion. I think that you throw Shohei Ohtani at number one because he's as extraordinary a talent as we've ever seen. And what Aaron Judge does at the plate is extraordinary. Is he as good a player on the base paths as Bobby? No. Is he as good a fielder as Bobby? No. But at the plate, Ohtani's maybe the only guy that rivals him. So I don't think it's anything to panic over regarding Bobby Witt Jr. I think Vinny Pasquantino will get himself back into form. He got off to such a hot start this season. He's still got that hamstring thing lingering a little bit, although being able to stretch that double into a triple the other night was really impressive, even with the hamstring tightness. I think he'll figure it out. The guy I would be a little bit more worried about is Salvi, just because Salvi's a little bit older, right? And it's inevitable. Father Time is undefeated. Although, look over on the NBA side, LeBron James is giving, you know, Father Time a run for his money. Father Time always wins. So I think that there is always a concern surrounding an older player entering their mid-30s of when are we going to see the decline. I'm not sure if we're going to see the decline, but the fact that he's gotten off to a slow start this year certainly doesn't exhibit confidence in what he can provide you when you get into, you know, the dog days of August and even into late July and as you head into September and what could inevitably be another postseason kind of push for the Royals in the hopes that you perform a lot better in that September push than you did a season ago. The worst case scenario for replacing both of them, that in reference to Melendez and Renfro, I'm sure, is that the replacements are just as bad. That's it. Yes, you're right. It just depends on who those replacements are, right? If the replacement is Gavin Cross and it's his first Major League Baseball opportunity and maybe he's not quite ready, which it's nearly impossible to determine when a guy is truly ready or not. But if you have any reservations about it and you call him up a little bit early and things don't work out, the consequences of that could destroy the career of somebody like a Gavin Cross or a Drew Waters or a Jack Caglione. So yes, is that the, you know, worst case scenario is that both guys play bad, but to take it a step further, you could also stunt the development of some of those guys and do some irreparable damage to confidence that could very much hurt you when you get further down the line in these guys' careers, when it's no longer, hey, they can be replacements. They're supposed to be everyday guys. So is the risk reward enough in that case? So that's an interesting discussion to be had. We've got a lot more to get to here. So many more messages in our text line that I want to discuss. 913-586-7965 is our number. Logan Weber here with you. Jacob Mustard alongside. You're listening to After Hours on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
After Hours, here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Logan Weber here with you until 9 o'clock tonight. Producer for this evening's show, Jacob Mustard. And we're talking Royals baseball after a 3-2 loss today in extras to Milwaukee. Opening up a 2-4 start to the season for the boys in blue. And opinions are being had. And we'll go through as many of them as we can here. 913-586-7965. Some of these are interesting takes. Some of them, maybe not so much. Are Witt and Vinny off to a slow start for the 2 and 3 hitters? They're a combined 9-for-39. Absolutely, they're off to slow starts this season. But again, it's early April. They're 6 games in. I have confidence that Bobby and Vinny will get things figured out, I'm sure. Another 816 in the text line says, I'm sure they'll get it going. You can lose a season in April. I know it for a fact because I've seen it with the Royals several times. Oh, certainly. I mean, if this Royals team is, you know, 4-20 or, you know, something by mid-April, yeah, the panic button is going to need to be hit. You can absolutely, you get to 10, 15, 16 games below 500 by the time April's over with, the panic button should have been pressed a while back, for sure. But I have confidence that that's not going to be the case with this Royals team. 310 says the Royals in 2014 and 15 were way more talented. Just ask Salvi. Honestly, if ticket prices went up, this team doesn't warrant it. Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody is trying to say that this Royals team is more talented than the 14-15 team is. Not even close. I mean, those 14 and 15 teams were true World Series contenders. I don't think the Royals are quite there yet. I also said Renfro and MJ aren't seasoned MLB players. I mean, I would say Renfro is, but maybe a little bit over-seasoned at this point. He's a little older. Let alone to win a World Series, not Central Division champs. You're wasting good pitching. These guys will never be pitched around. Teams will be pitched around to get to these guys. Royals will really be the same, much the same as last season. They overachieved last year. I would agree. I had this Royals team pegged somewhere between 84 and 88 wins, somewhere around where they were a year ago, because I thought this team was pretty similar. I think the bullpen is better than it was a year ago, but like we said, they overachieved in a lot of respects. And can that same level of success follow them this year? I'm not entirely sure. Another 816 says, we can't judge us to replicate what the Yankees did to this atrocious Brewers pitching. Yeah, I mean, they battered Milwaukee around, but the Yankees were tearing the cover off the baseball and have all year to begin this season. I'm not sure. Another 816 talking about, this is what upsets me about the Royals. Not going all in last year when it was 10 years since we'd seen the postseason. I agree. We should not tax our farm system, but go out and buy a bat for goodness sake. Not Tommy Pham. And then he asked about MJ Melendez. After hitting 17 bombs, why are you changing your swing? Because he hit 215, right? I mean, he had a bad year in terms of his average, and this is a Royals team that is less focused, I think, on hitting home runs and more focused about, and I know that this is a cliche, it's a money ball thing, getting on base. Get on base. If guys like MJ Melendez and Kyle Isbell and Jonathan India and can get on base, what that's going to do is open up RBI opportunities for your big three in the middle of the order with Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi. And when the lineup is working together, right, when guys are getting on base, guys are generating walks, guys are putting balls in play and getting singles and or extra base knocks out of it, it increases the confidence and increases, you know, everything for the rest of your lineup, gives those guys more confidence moving forward, gives them a better reason, a lot more to sink your teeth into when you get to the plate knowing, hey, I got a guy on second and third here, I got a guy on first and third here, no outs in the inning, one out in the inning, whatever it might be. This was one that I found honestly fascinating. Someone said, talking about the, you know, everyone talks about a leash on MJ. This came from a 913. Is there a leash on Q? Asking, you know, what? How long is the leash for Matt Quatrero? Incredibly long, suffice it to say. This team won 86 games a year ago after winning 56 games in 23. You took them to the postseason. You were a finalist for manager of the year in the American League. And my opinion, should have won it, but I digress. So I think the leash is incredibly long for Matt Quatrero. He has proven that he deserves the benefit of the doubt. Will that continue? I don't know. But for now, I think no matter what happens to the Royals this year, he's going to be around next season. He has earned that based off of what the Royals did a season ago. A 913 says to bring up Cags, and that solves the Renfro problem. I get it, right? I know everybody's in love with Caglione. I know. He's got no experience playing right field. None. And if we all harken back to a few years ago, and I know it's not a great example, but MJ Melendez did not get a ton of reps in left field before he made his way up to the show and became the Royals left fielder after Alex Gordon decided to hang it up. And we all recall the fielding trouble that MJ Melendez had in left early on in his career. And frankly, some of those problems have followed him even to this point in his career. I just don't think you rush a guy. I don't. He's got 30 games of major league base or of minor league baseball experience at this point. Got drafted last year, played in 20, 30 games. He did some fall ball, and then he was with the big league club in spring training. That's it. Doesn't even have a full year of minor league baseball under him. Doesn't even have half a year of minor league baseball under him. He needs to get his footing under him a little bit more in the minor leagues before I think you pull the trigger on something of that magnitude with a guy who's a top 10 prospect in baseball. Somebody mentioned the lineups for this Royals team, and this is an interesting, this is one that I find fascinating, right? In the Royals' six games this year, they have had six different lineups. This person says that's crazy. That's what spring training is for. I agree very much so on what you're saying, for the most part. Yeah, the six games, six different lineups, that's a lot of moving parts. That's really hard for guys to get comfortable in their surroundings, right? I mean, outside of Jonathan India, Bobby Witt, Salvador Perez, and Michael Massey, those are the only four guys on this Royals team that have at least 20 at-bats through the first six games of the year, right? Not even Vinny. Vinny's only got 18 at-bats. Renfro's got 18 at-bats. Mikel Garcia's got 17. And then things take a dip. Isbell's only got 15 times at the dish. Mark Canna's only had six at-bats this year. Melendez with 13. Fermin's got 10. So I agree. It's hard for the rest of these guys. You've got four guys there that are pretty solidified. India, Massey, who's going to work himself around as a utility guy, Bobby, and Salvi. But the other guys have sort of been hit or miss in this lineup. And Mikel Garcia, he's played in all six games, but some of it has been as a pinch hitter or late inning pinch running. There's just a lot of too many moving parts, I would say. But again, it's the first week of the season, so I think they're just trying to find the right lineup to make things work. And this is the best time of year to do that, right? You don't want to be doing this in June, July. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to continue later on in the year. If you're going to continue to try to tinker with the lineup, find what guys work well with each, this is the time of year for it, right? Okay, who hits better against lefties? Who hits better against righties? You know, how does this guy protect the guy behind him in the order? Those are the sorts of things you got to figure out this time of year. And it could lend itself to some losses, which is unfortunate, but we take that as what we will. Got another 913 here who says, give them 30 games and then change Renfro and Melendez out. Fire the hitting coach, bring in an advisor like George Brett, etc. Well, I mean, Brett is already associated with the organization. He's been the Royals hitting coach before. So, I mean, he's still affiliated with the Royals. He's in and around Kauffman quite consistently. So he's already an advisor of sorts. And you've got Ned Yost in there advising as well, but more to advise JJ Piccolo, less the day-to-day operations with the players. I'm not even sure 30 games is enough to make a definitive decision on Melendez and Renfro. I just don't. And maybe I'm being, I don't know, maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm too positive regarding those guys, or not negative enough, because I won't go to so far as to say I'm positive or I'm in support of those guys. I'm just not as willing to yank a guy 30 games into a 160-game season. Just a lot going on. Again, 913-586-7965. Is our number. Logan Weber here alongside Jacob Mustard. You're listening to After Hours right here on your home for Kansas City sports. It's 96.5 The Fan. Text line popping today. Absolutely popping this afternoon and evening here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. Jacob Mustard alongside. I have somebody in here in the text line that is very much coming to the defense of MJ Melendez for a rather strange reason, I have to say. This person in the text line in 816 says, MJ has the best drip in Major League Baseball. He takes walks and works pitchers in the count and is a solid big leaguer. Leave MJ alone. All right. I mean, I won't argue with you when, in terms of his accessories, like what he wears to the ballpark. He kind of kills it with his fit. I won't disagree. Solid hitter. He's a career 219. He draws a decent amount of walks, you know, at least through the first 2 years of his career. In 2022 and 23, he drew 66 and 62 walks respectively. But last year, he only walked 35 times. That to 113 strikeouts. So you put together his hits and walks. He had 120 combined hits and walks and struck out 113 times. All of that in 412 at-bats. Solid big leaguer feels a bit strong. But again, I won't argue with what that man's got on during the course of the game. That whole look good, feel good, play good sort of thing. Somebody said, is that MJ's brother who texted in? Oh, that was funny. I found that one entertaining. Someone said, it couldn't be worse, could it? Remember Nate Eaton? Oh, Nate Eaton. Wow. Nate Eaton, who had a remarkable run with the Kansas City Royals back in 2023, hitting a remarkable 76 with a 125 on base percentage. Got called up to the Royals, played in 28 games in which he was 4 for 53, excuse me, in 56 plate appearances. Woof. Not great. He is, of course, Nate Eaton no longer with the Kansas City Royals. I believe he's now in the Boston Red Sox system. Yeah, he's playing in Worcester in Boston, playing in their AAA affiliate. He's hitting like 440 to open up the year through just three games. So he's off to a fairly decent start, hitting 455, 11 ABs. So we'll see. Somebody said, I want a Jonathan India jersey ASAP. Me too, man. Dude, the guts to take 99 off the dome and then say, yeah, put me back. I'm hitting leadoff tomorrow. Don't care. I'm hitting leadoff tomorrow, right? And you could tell he was frustrated. He let Clase have it a little bit, as did the fans at Kauffman. They were none too happy about Clase going high and tight on India there. Certainly. So that was an interesting one. Someone said this is the 2013 team. Right on pace. Hey, man, could be. Talking about George Brett, somebody said, at some point, didn't George Brett have to be the batting coach for the last championship team? Maybe he needs to make another appearance. I said, yeah, that was the 2013 season where they fired the hitting coach like in May. And so from like late May to late July, George Brett was the pitching or the hitting coach. And then they hired somebody full time and he went back to being the president of baseball ops. So, yeah, that was just before the championship team. So that same person said, hey, we're right on that pace. Here we go. Right back to it. I don't know why the question had to start. This season is solely focused on Renfroe and Melendez. Can we pivot to how bad Kyle Isbell has been and how inconsistent he has been in his Royals career? That came from an 816 in the text line. Again, I feel like I keep harping on it and I keep going back to it. Kyle Isbell is not in this Royals lineup because of his bat. He is in the lineup because of his glove, because he is outstanding defensively in center field. He's a career 230 hitter, right? I don't know if we will see him be much better than that. I think the ceiling for a guy like Kyle Isbell is 240, 250. If that's where he's at and he's on base percentage is around 300 and he does what he does in center field, you stomach that. Just the way it is. Somebody said, so you're saying that 30 points on his average makes a difference for changing a swing. We were talking about MJ Melendez earlier. The same person earlier was asking why he changed his swing after 17 home runs last year. Because he hit 215 and he's trying to get himself to be a 240, 250 kind of hitter and keep himself in the big leagues. And, to you know, 30 points on his average makes a difference for changing his swing. It could. And if it does, if he does become that 240, 250 hitter, then he's going to have more opportunities to hit home runs, right? I mean, 17 home runs is nothing extraordinary either. So if he can get to be a 240, 250 hitter, that means he's getting bat on ball at a much higher clip. Although last year, he was one of the most unlucky players in baseball. You can look up the stats. Him and Vinny Pasquantino were both in the top five of Major League Baseball last year in terms of hard hit outs. Tough one to stomach. We got a lot more to talk about, though, alongside the lines of the Kansas City Chiefs. We've got NFL draft. I want to get into some college basketball talk because we will not have another episode of After Hours this week. I want to talk about the Final Four before these games get kicked off this weekend. That one's going to be a lot of fun. We may talk a little bit about, you know, what's going on with the Yankees. We've got some college basketball, some college sports news regarding all three regional teams in D1 with MU, KU, and K-State. All of that is going to be coming up here in the next 2 hours of our program here tonight, After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside producer Jacob Mustard. Folks, this is your home for Kansas City sports. Stick around.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.